9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour is brought to you by Fabaro. Stay tuned to learn how you can win a free HomeKit bundle pack from 9 to 5 Mac and Fabaro. At this hour, at this moment, Apple has announced that it is officially on the record discontinuing its airport line of Wi-Fi routers. The airport is no more.
All three.
The Airport Express, the Airport Extreme, and the Airport Time Capsule. I'll give you their statement in a moment, but this follows years of not updating those products at all. So it's kind of no surprise, but at the same time, I think it's also kind of a shame because they were nice routers. This is what they say.
It's also like, why right this instant? Like, they could have discontinued it any time in the last, 4 years.
Yeah, so here's the timeline. Today, they tell 9 to 5 Mac, we're discontinuing the Apple Airport Base Station products. They will be available through Apple.com, Apple's retail stores, and Apple-authorized resellers while supplies last. Now, I ask if there would be a price cut, in this process of discontinuing the routers, and they said no. I imagine third parties. Sellers might want to discount them to get rid of their inventory. I guess what is it, $99 for the Express and then up from there. So still,
yeah, they're not cheap.
Yeah, still selling them as long as they're available, but they're not going to, they're finally saying that we're not making any more and that's it. Once these are gone from shelves, they're gone for good. This follows Bloomberg reporting that the airport team was disbanded. That was in November 2016. So that was a long time ago. Since then, earlier this year, we were first to discover that the Apple stores were then selling Linksys mesh systems. That was in January. And at the time, Apple, I asked Apple, I was like, does this mean anything for the airport line? And they said, quote, people love our airport products and we continue to sell them. Connectivity is important in the home and we are giving customers yet another option that is well suited for larger homes, end quote. So that was only a few months ago. So like you said, why now? I don't know. But as of today, they are finally saying that they're not going to make any more airport routers.
Yeah, because surely in January, when they added the Linksys product, the topic of what are we doing with the airport product line must have come up because they were ready to tell you that it's a product in our lineup.
I mean,
we heard that before, Matt Minnie, they continue to love. It's like in January, it seemed like they were happy to have them stay around for longer, and they clearly in January weren't expecting to cut them off in May, so maybe in January, at the time, they thought they had an idea about where they were going to take the products and change them up a bit, and that just hasn't come together, and now they've given up.
Right, yeah. From what I understand, they're going to have some support articles published over the next few weeks. I don't think that are ready today. That will recommend alternatives for people, including the mesh Wi-Fi system from Linksys that they offer. But they largely pointed in the briefing on this that people rely on the routers that come built into their modems from their ISPs, and that's popular nowadays. And then there's things like AirPlay. So the Airport Express, the $100 router, the small one, has an auxiliary port in the back, and you can connect something like the iPod Hi-Fi, for example, or any other stereo, and do actual peer-to-peer AirPlay. And then for things like Time Machine Backup, the Time Capsule is the only thing that had that solution, unless you do a network detached storage kind of option, but nothing from Apple that's wireless backup for your Mac. But they think that, solutions exist that are okay without their contribution to that.
It's a tough one. The capsule, I'm not gonna miss, really. Who was using the Time Capsule nowadays? It's an icky hard drive, a spinning hard drive in this big box. It wasn't cheap. It was $300, $400.
Right.
For a 2 terabyte or 3 terabyte option. And most people that are professional enough to have paid $300, $400 to maybe get a Time Capsule have network attached storage or external hard drives, and they just run Time Machine on them. That's what I do. I have a Synology NAS in the office somewhere, and that runs a Time Machine client, and it works pretty decently. I don't think the time capture itself is. If you just said to me, Apple's discontinued one of the three AirPort products, like the time capture would have been the top one, I would have guessed that that one's gone.
Right.
The extreme, they're just like normal router. I don't have much to say beyond what we've said before on this. Like, I still think Apple should have a nice router that integrates with their operating systems directly. You can set up from the iOS device. You don't have to fiddle about with weird websites or silly little apps. You can just do tap, tap, tap in the settings of the Wi-Fi and be up and ready to go. Like a setup as simple as connecting a HomePod, for instance, or, you know, a W1 AirPods scenario.
Yeah.
What would be kind of cool if they are killing the extreme, if maybe in like iOS 12 they have like a new third-party partnership where, I don't know exactly how this would work, but like they could partner with popular third-party router companies and have it so that you can set up one of these routers from within the settings.
Yeah, like because have like
that's
like,
one of the big features of the AirPorts at the moment is that you don't even have to download the AirPort utility app from the App Store. In the settings, a couple of years ago, they added like a native management and configuration of the AirPort system from literally iOS settings, and you can do it from there from the Wi-Fi page. It'd be nice if they had like an extension point for routers to do that themselves, because if they are that was one of the big benefits of having this, is that you didn't have to worry about third-party stuff. Even if, you know, you a random person who had an iPhone, they could bring the router home and do it without having to worry about anything. Maybe iOS 12 could add like a way for common routers to be set up, like a one-tap setup type thing, where you just give it a name, you give it the password, it sets up the router, and it connects your devices automatically. Like, yeah. And that's it.
Almost like
that.
Like,
and then if you want to do more advanced stuff, you can go to the App Store and download the specific app, or go to that web portal and type in the numbers.
Yeah, almost like AirPrint, where you know, certain printers are sanctioned from Apple and include, like, iOS includes drivers for these printers without you needing to go and download those. But there could be like the equivalent of AirPrint for third-party routers, including, you know, the Linksys ones that Apple now sells, and then, you know, maybe a few other popular ones where you have that clean setup. And, you know, and speaking of like AirPrint, that's something that also has been like popularized as much as printing is still a thing, that at one point, you know, the AirPort Express was used to put your printer on the network, you know, via USB.
But it never worked with iOS AirPrint.
Right. It's like Mac era.
Printing on a Mac, yeah.
Yeah. And one of the weird parts about all of this is that a few weeks ago, in like the second iOS 11.4 beta, maybe the first, it was removed in a recent one, but one of the iOS 11.4 betas showed in the home app the ability to add AirPort Express as a HomeKit speaker, which strongly suggested that iOS 11.4, if it includes AirPlay 2 or AirPlay 2 whenever it ships, would work with AirPort Express as an AirPlay speaker. So you could say, you know, AirPlay audio from your iPhone to your HomePod and your AirPort Express connected speaker, you know, stereo or whatever. We couldn't try it because you needed to have a firmware update for the AirPort Express. And, you know, Apple's not talking about that because it's part of a beta, and we don't know if that's going to actually ship or not. But it's all weird timing, right? It's like that if it actually ships, we'll see. But then also like Apple saying, we're not selling these anymore once we're out of stock, and then giving it a pretty good new feature.
Yeah. I mean, if you take their statement on the Linksys system at the beginning of January, at that time, obviously it seemed like they weren't planning on killing them off. So maybe there was a team working on a small software update to support AirPlay 2 for the Express.
Yeah.
But now that it's come around to discontinuation, I can't really see them rolling out a software update for it. Like,
So
maybe that whole thing will just be scrapped and never come out.
Yeah, a couple of things. I mean, with the Bloomberg report in late 2016, you know, the focus of that really was that, like, the hardware team, you know, I guess like the networking experts have been you know, they left the company or they're on other projects. But you would still see like firmware updates for the airport routers. And I think you'll still see those for several years now, like as security updates are needed. There's a big one. It was like the crack vulnerability, like last year sometime.
Yeah.
And I don't think it was like day one, but like Apple built a fix for that. And then people got a firmware update for that, through the airport utility app. So I could still see like it being the AirPlay team building the feature for Airport Express and shipping it, just because it's like a product that they still kind of sell and that definitely still exists out there, like is used by people. It's a weirder thing to me is that there's no like Apple solution for Time Machine. Like Time Capsule is kind of perfect for that. I never actually owned one of those. I did own an Extreme, and I did own a lot of the Expresses because you could use those as like extenders. You know, wasn't great for making your range better, but it did the job. It is kind of odd to say like buy a hard drive and back up your Mac, like, because I also have a Synology, but I've not had a good experience with using that as my Time Machine backup source. Like Time Machine needs work on its own to be more reliable, but also like I get a lot of errors of like it can't be found on my network, the backup drive. So I think it's like kind of wonky for like an on-site but remote backup, you know.
Apple's answer is going to be iCloud.
Yeah, iCloud. And I've got the 2 terabyte storage plan, and I do documents and desktop sync and iCloud photo library. So like the most important things are there. But I think by default, apps like Logic and Final Cut don't put anything in those iCloud syncing folders. And there's some limit. I don't know what it is. But like if you put your, you know, like the file for your photo library, even though it's all in iCloud, you can't make that like desktop file sync because it's too large. It'll say ineligible. So there are some limitations there too.
You can get a lot of the way today as like a normal user, because if you sync documents in desktop, that's most of your data. Obviously, all the apps that store to iCloud containers already, like iWork and all that, and you know, most modern apps store, that is essentially a backup to iCloud. Plus, your actual applications that you buy from the App Store, they'll come back down when you set up a new Mac and log in, and you can re-download them.
Yeah,
but it's not the same as doing like a full Time Machine backup, where you're literally backing up the state of your hard drive, right? All your preferences, all your random settings, configurations, your custom stuff that you might leave outside. If you're a developer, you'll have, you know, 4 different beta versions of Xcode and all those configurations that might be installed, and they'll get backed up in a Time Machine backup, but they won't be backed up to iCloud, for instance. But you could see a pathway where they eventually offer like a full disk backup, similar to what Backblaze offers, and, you know, like an iCloud Time Machine, like a literal back up to the cloud, and that would be a way for them to upsell people on the more expensive iCloud plans, and it would be a substitute for them getting rid of the Time Capsule.
Yeah, and Time Machine does more than just like cloning, you know, like making like a clone of what's on your drive. You know, they got like versioning because it backs up, I think like every hour, changes, like it does like one big backup, and then it backs up changes every hour. And it goes on from there, how it works and how it removes older, you know, backups. But
I mean, iCloud has versioning; it's just not very well
right
exposed.
Like they've got the pieces.
If you delete files, you can go to iCloud.com, go to this random settings page, and see all your deleted files and restore them. Like they do keep these versions. There's just not a good, you know, UI to access them most of the time. Or if you're in iWork, sometimes you can go back versions directly from there. Like you can just click on the document, click previous versions, and it will download things for you to switch back to. But you could see them develop that into like a proper UI for it and to make it as easy to do as, you know, a current Time Machine.
But they do a pretty good job in Mac apps, where they have like, I think it's called versions, and you can click there from the title bar of the app, and you can get to like previous saves of it. You know, it's like autosave is part of autosave from like the Lion, like since Lion. I don't think there's anything like that on iOS though, is there?
Not really, no.
Yeah. So, I mean, if all this came together, then you'd get a pretty good solution. Back to what you said originally, though, is part of the appeal of the airport routers, though, is just like they had the airport utility app and set up, like, even if you don't need the app, setup is super easy. So maybe they can add that to third party routers, you know, through some sanction program. That's the thing, is like I've tried a lot of the mesh systems, Eero, which sponsors sometimes, like they've got I think that Eero is like the, you know, they're not sponsoring anytime soon or lately. So I'll just say they have like the easiest to recommend to like family, like user friendly setup. The thing where they fall short on is they don't yet have a solution with like a lot of Ethernet ports. Which if you have a lot of like smart home stuff, then you're going to need to add on a bridge so that you can just plug in all your different bridges for like your connected lights and your connected sensors and all this stuff. And that's kind of an edge case anyway. But, you know, like Netgear and Linksys have their systems and they have a lot of the Ethernet ports in the back of the main unit. And then also on like the satellite units as well. So that's like, I guess more of a power user option, but I've used both of those systems and their apps are really bad, like really bad. So, you know, I think
I use Orbi and the app is bad and I end up going through the website, but you know, I'm a technical user, I can understand it. And I fiddle with loads of the options, but the reason I go with the Orbi is that generally a lot of the benchmarks say that performance, like, range and speed is slightly better as well, just because of the different way the base station is set up. But yeah, in terms of like something you could give off to a random family member, the Eero is definitely the best mesh option for that.
Really. Yeah, I've given my mom an Eero system that came by way of a sponsorship. And then I've got the, you know, we had another sponsorship and they had newer hardware that I received. And I used it for quite a while. And I can definitely say like the app experience is by far the best with Eero, to the point where I'm preparing, like I'm getting ready to give it to my dad so that he can have, like, it's something I can just give him and say like, download the app, follow the steps and you can figure it out. I can't say the same for, you know, Netgear and the Linksys stuff. And the Linksys stuff is what I'm using now because Apple sells it. And I kind of want to just get a feel for like, what is it like to use the thing that Apple's recommending, you know?
But don't you think that's kind of bad that the Apple Store recommended one isn't the one that you could say is the most easy?
Yeah, totally,
to set up.
Totally. And I think the thing there is like, you know, they do a lot of stuff with Linksys, which I believe is owned by Belkin, which they do a lot of stuff with, which I believe is now owned by Foxconn. So Apple's sanctioned route, like the router that they recommend you buy in their stores is the Foxconn router. That's crazy.
It's all friends together.
Yeah.
I think the biggest loss with this discontinuation is definitely the expresses, like the Apple way to have like an AirPlay speaker extension, you know, turn any speaker into an AirPlay output.
Yeah,
and even have a little like handy router if you're on the go, or if you just want to expand the range, or you want to plug in a printer, for instance, like a USB printer, and you're still in the old days, like that kind of functionality was always pretty unique, especially the because there's no other way to make any random speaker an AirPlay speaker. Obviously the problem was it was never updated and it was really expensive, like it was $99 for something that really wasn't worth its thing. It didn't even support AC, like the latest version, the latest model. This doesn't preclude, for instance, them doing like a HomePod, like they just can brand it differently, right? They could do an AirPlay 2 dongle essentially for the speaker that makes any professional, you know, any speaker with the jack wireless over AirPlay 2. They just don't call it an AirPort. Like they could call it HomePod Mini and just have a have an extension plug into it, or just call, you know, they can call it whatever they want and still provide, like, it won't necessarily be a wireless router, but you can still provide like the core AirPlay 2 extender stuff. Like you don't have the that product doesn't have to be called AirPort Express.
I could see them giving some partner like Belkin or Linksys, you know, access to something with AirPlay 2 that you couldn't have otherwise, and then them sell some kind of an adapter that is like...
Yeah, like give them a license to be an AirPlay receiver of that kind.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen this with different adapters recently anyway. Like, I think...
Gigabit Ethernet, yeah.
Yeah, for a while they relied on them to support, like, offer that. So I can see that being a thing. It's hard to imagine Apple doing like a Chromecast audio equivalent, because Google pretty much has that. You know, they have a cheap little, you know, cable with a headphone jack in it that, you know, connects to Wi-Fi and lets you beam audio to it over the internet. But you know, it's hard to see that from Apple. But I could see them leaning on a partner and selling it in their stores, you know, and giving them access to things that you need to make that. Now, before we jump off of this, one thing that concerns me about this announcement is when they said back in January that people love our AirPort products and we continue to sell them, that sounds a lot like how they described the Mac Mini. You know, People love the Mac Mini. It continues to be offered in our lineup. Like,
it's a product in our lineup.
That is the truth until it changes. And then they say, we're discontinuing the Apple AirPort base station products. You know, that's the very next line from Apple. And you could see that, like, the whole timing makes no sense to us. It's like, what changed between now and then? That same thing could play out with the Mac Mini or, like, any other product from Apple that doesn't get updated, you know, regularly enough.
Do you think they had, like, a round table? They were like, right, let's sit down internally. What are we doing with the AirPort? Let's make a choice. And then they fiddled around for a while and were like, we're just going to get rid of it.
I mean, on the roadmap of AirPort, like, the next thing would be probably a mesh system. And they might have just been, like, way behind on that, like, on even, like, considering it. I think there's some new protocols coming up, like, after 802.11ac, I forget what the next letter is. They've never had a great order, but there's a new protocol that's going to be, you know, out. And I guess they decided that they don't want to do that, and they've got other, you know, they're already having enough challenges with what you know, shipping what they've announced. So I guess in that aspect, it's a good thing. But at the same time, like, I also feel like, you know, based on reporting and what we know, is that this team has been disbanded for a long time. So it doesn't mean that they're going to suddenly have a lot of free hands now that weren't there before.
Yeah, like, we heard that most of these people gone off to, like, Apple TV, and some people gone to a HomePod project, stuff like that. Like,
other companies, you know, yeah.
These people, yeah, other companies. Like, these people already assigned. Like, I mean, I think when we last spoke about this, we basically gave, like, the ultimatum of, you know, you have to update them or you have to kill them. And, well, they did one of those things. So
that is true.
I guess I applaud their decision-making ability.
Yeah, the last time that Apple did something similar to this was with the Thunderbolt display. So, and this was very messy. It was like a PR person, like, suggested to Neil Abitel at The Verge that Apple was out of the display business, although the Thunderbolt display was still available for sale. And no one would say it on the record. It was just like this weird in-between space. And then finally Apple, like, told TechCrunch and maybe a few other sites that, like, on the record, we're discontinuing the Thunderbolt display. Whenever the inventory is gone, we're not going to replenish it. You know, the same thing as the AirPort story. Only this time, they done a better job by at least saying it now. You know, the timing is weird. Like, they could have said it in January or whatever, but it's curious how they decide these things.
I think in terms of refining and focus, this is ultimately what, if they can, I hope what happened inside, they were like, let's give this a few weeks, let's try and seriously think about, is there something valuable we can change here or do differently to what the market's doing? We've got Time Machine covered with iCloud, we've got Alexis router on sale, we're not really competing, it's time to get out, and maybe they'll come back in, you know, a few years' time if they have a good idea, but maybe not, and then that's fine. But they've made a choice, they're out of the market.
Yeah,
that's cleaning up the lineup.
Yeah, I do agree in that regard that this is a positive thing. I mean, it was the same way with the iPods, like last year. It was like, or whenever they discontinued all but the iPod Touch, it was like, update them or discontinue them. Like, stop selling old stuff for the same price. So what we're seeing today is Apple's no longer going to sell AirPorts after they run out of inventory. So,
yeah, and for a limited time, you can still buy them at the same price.
Yeah. And still expect, like, some level of support in terms of, like, they're going to continue working. If they break down, you've got, you know, the same level of support as you would otherwise. The only thing you're not going to get, I worry, is the iPhone X app ever. Because right now the AirPort utility app is one of the only after iMovie Apple apps without iPhone X support. And I also think, correct me if I'm wrong, it was never updated for the big iPad.
I couldn't tell you on that one, but okay. It rings a bell.
I think it's a 9.7-inch app, and so for either iPad Pro that isn't 9.7-inch, it's a little fuzzy looking. So it still functions. Mental. It's just the resolution's off. So.
Rip AirPort.
9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by Fabaro, the makers of UL-certified smart home products that guarantee a reliable HomeKit experience. 9 to 5 Mac has teamed up with Fabaro to offer a special HomeKit bundle giveaway, which includes 4 products valued at over $250. Included in the bundle is Fabaro's door and window sensor, which detects contact, tampering, and even temperature, motion sensor, which changes color based on temperature, flood sensor, which detects leaks, tampering, and temperature, and the new HomeKit version of the button, which lets you assign up to 3 actions, including HomeKit scenes, to different clicks. To win this HomeKit bundle, just look for the giveaway link in the show notes or on 9to5mac.com, and check out this week's installment of HomeKit Weekly to learn how to put HomeKit sensors to work with automation. Our thanks to Fabaro for sponsoring 9to5mac Happy Hour. Let's talk about another iPhone X app that did get updated this week. Everyone has been writing in to tell me that Amazon Alexa for iPhone is now optimized for the iPhone X. I'm very happy about that because it took several months for that to happen. My take on the Amazon Alexa app, though, is that it's still really bad. Like, everything, it's prettier now because it doesn't have letterboxes. But every other complaint I have about it, everything has a load in from the web when it feels like it should be like a real app, and it's just barely, it's really bad. All right, let's talk about some news now. This week, last few days, Maca Takara has reported that case maker sources believe that an iPhone SE 2 is coming sometime in May. So we're at the end of April now. This could be just a few weeks away. This follows the regulatory body that the Eurasian regulatory body that you really like, because they tend to predict new products coming with great accuracy.
Yeah, the Eurasian Economic Commission database.
Yeah,
puts model identifiers for new Apple products appear in there, and then a few weeks later, it's not like months and months away. It's within, within a month, the products come out. And
yeah, it's a matter of
pretty
weeks.
Reliably with several different products recently, like iPhone 7, AirPods, and new iPads, stuff like that. So there were like 11 new model identifiers added to that database about a week ago now. So we're very much on track for a May product release.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that entry, like, we could read it out to be June. Like, at WWDC, they say, hey, and here's the iPhone SE 2. It's like some weird part of the announcement. Could happen. They did Max last year. But Maca Takara's source says May, so that's really soon. They also say no headphone jack, which to me kind of surprises, because there needs to be like an obvious payoff for that. It was unclear for the iPhone 7. Like, it was kind of debated. Like, what do you gain from that? On some level, you get better water resistance. I think optical image stabilization for video was an addition that was afforded by that. For the iPhone SE 2, or whatever they call it, the 4-inch iPhone, no headphone jack matches with their promise of like a wireless future. And if you're using AirPods or any of the Bluetooth headphones, then you don't need it anyway. You can use Lightning headphones if you need to. There'll probably be an adapter in the box. But at the same time, like, you're taking the iPhone 5 design and you're removing the headphone jack. It's like one of the things that people like about it, I guess, is that it's like the, old reliable iPhone. And I wonder how that will be received.
I think the headphone jack debate is passed. Really, like, people complain about it still, but I don't think anyone's clamoring. I don't think Apple's losing out sales because they don't have a headphone jack anymore.
Yeah, and this isn't a flagship iPhone, so they've gotten over the hard part with major new iPhones. And this, but I do wonder if the same camp that isn't happy about no headphone jack is also the same camp that prefers the smaller iPhone or the cheaper iPhone. So maybe it'll resurface as an issue if true. But we'll probably find out in a matter of weeks, if not days. So one thing they say is that they're unsure on wireless charging, which we believe would require, like, the coils wouldn't be expensive because wireless charging has been in cheap Android phones for a while, but that the back would need to be a material that is not aluminum. There's a little bit of glass on the top and bottom of the current SE, all the iPhone 5s and 5Ss. But not like all glass back that, you get where the coil is located.
Adding wireless charge to the SE would require a significant design exterior change to like make the whole thing glass, essentially.
Yeah, like
all these reports indicate of significant design changes not on the cards.
Right. I guess the cheap Android phones achieve it by using plastic instead of, you know, aluminum. Yeah. You know, lower build quality gets you a better feature. But I can't see Apple, you know, I mean, the 5C could do this if they had coils in there, I imagine. But so
that would maybe be in affordance, though. That would be the trade-off. No headphone jack.
Yeah.
But you've got wireless charging now. Like, I don't think they need a reason to kill the headphone jack off at this point. It's like done and dusted. Even the excuse from the iPhone 7 where they were like, oh, we put a barometric pressure sensor there. You know, whatever they said. Like, that didn't stop people complaining about it, did it? Like,
right,
they just brunted the complaints. They took it on the chin and then they moved on. And now some people talk about it and then most people don't. Like, they can have an iPhone SE, people be happy that it's got a faster chip inside it, maybe it has wireless charging, and then everyone and move on with their life. Like, I don't think the headphone debate is going to resurface in a bigger way. I really don't.
Do you think it's weird that it's still on the iPads, like every iPad?
Yeah.
I mean, I get it on the Mac, kind of, but...
Even on the Mac, I kind of think it's a bit weird, like...
I would take an SD card slot over the headphone jack.
Yeah, like, Phil Schiller once said it was like pro audio solutions through the headphone jack, but most pro audio solutions have external mixers that they plug in via USB or something.
Like, yeah.
I mean, we're doing pro audio work right now, recording this podcast, and we have USB mics. Like,
wow.
We don't connect to the tiny little headphone jack on the side of the laptop.
Caveat there, I'm using, with my microphone, I use headphones that have a headphone jack.
Yes, I do use the same headphone jack headphones, but they plug into the microphone, not to the laptop. So
The
headphone jack on the laptop never gets used.
And I only use these because anytime I change from these are Ear Beats headphones. They're Beats Ear Beats headphones from a while ago. They sell a Lightning version now, but that wouldn't get me anywhere on the Mac. But they plug into my mic, so I hear me and you and my, you know, whatever system audio. But any other headphones I've used experience bleed where you talk and it comes out of my headphones and back into my mic, and then we have that echo. And it takes a lot of editing to get around that in the audio. With these headphones, they're like kind of in-ear headphones. And I'm sure there's like clones of the same style all over the market. But like this is what I've found to work. And I've not...
It works and we don't want to change it.
Right. I would love to just use AirPods.
What you said there is the key reason why I think it's weird that it's not on the iPad, but is on the MacBook, which is the Lightning connector.
Yeah.
Because they have Lightning earbuds that they could include with the iPads if they wanted to.
That's
but they
true.
Don't include earbuds anyway. But they, if they were selling them extra, they can be like, all right, we can buy these and they work. Whereas on the Mac, it's like, well, you have USB ports or USB-C ports, and USB-C headphones kind of exist, but Apple doesn't sell any. So that's why, and obviously at the end of the day, the products are bigger and they have more space anyway. But
right.
I do think it's weird they stay around on the iPads, and I would guess it's not long for this world, and they might get rid of them relatively soon.
If they shift to a new design this year that's like more iPhone 10 style, please, then that would be a good time to make the change.
Yeah, because if you actually think about it, the chassis style of the iPads is still 3 to 4 years old in mostly. Like, obviously, the 10.5-inch iPad is newer, but apart from that,
it predates
the iPhone 7 dropping the headphone jack.
Yeah, that's true. The May release, this will be new for an iPhone, right? Like, new iPhone in May. And also to do a Red 8 and 8 Plus, I guess this month, and then to do the iPhone SE 2 next month. We trust the database to be correct, and so why not believe in the May rumor? Do you think there's any chance that the gold iPhone 10 would show up here as well?
Ooh. I think it's too late for a gold iPhone 10. Like, everyone keeps talking about the supply chain ramping down, not making new models.
Yeah.
It's going to be discontinued and then replaced with an iPhone 10 looking device, but it isn't an iPhone 10. Like, I think in that mix of rumor, there would be a mention of, oh, Apple's going to do a production run of a new color. Not, we're just cutting production entirely in the next couple of months.
Yeah, so that's true.
That's why I don't think the gold iPhone 10 is going to be a thing.
Yeah.
Well, the only thing I would say about the unreliability of the database is that it doesn't say specifically which iPhones are getting updated. It just has a load of model numbers, and then it says a smartphone from Apple running iOS 11.
Yeah, so
in a very outside chance, they could do like a minor revision to all of the other iPhones, like an internal antenna change or something like that, and then release all them at the same time, and it could not be an SE at all.
Right.
I'm pretty confident that there'll be some new iPhone models soon, but it's not 100% confirmed to be an SE, just to cover the bases there.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense then. And then with every new move that Apple makes, what do you think about AirPower? The odds of that arriving in May.
I mean, if the SE had wireless charging, it'd be kind of cool if they did it together and had like an AirPower release plus the SE that can work on the AirPower mat. In reality, I think the AirPower timeline is messed up by some internal problems or holdbacks, and I don't think they're like keeping it back to do it in concert with a product release of a related thing.
Yeah.
I think it'll just come out when it's ready sometime this year, as they promised, sometime across 2018. I don't think it's not like, oh, we'll keep it back and do it with an SE. Like, I think the only driving factor in the timelines of the AirPower people will be, we're getting out as soon as we can, and whenever that is, it'll come out.
It's not that they need the retail space in the stores, and they need to sell all of the airport base stations, and then as soon as everyone buys all of those, they'll release AirPower. It's not quite that. Okay, well, I mean, that's going to be neat, because the original SE was part of this bigger event that included the smaller version of the iPad Pro. So the first, like, regular-sized iPad that could use the Apple Pencil and Smart Keyboard introduced True Tone for the first time, right? Was that 9.7 is iPad Pro?
Yeah, that was a March event. They did SE and the 9.7-inch iPad Pro in a March event.
Yeah, they showed clips for the first time, which, you know, judge it how you will. And then there was the SE, so it was like a full event. This sounds like it'll just be like, you know, update on the website, maybe. I can't imagine that there's enough stuff to go into a May event, knowing that around the corner you also have WWDC in June. We'll see how it goes.
Now, yeah, I don't think there'll be an event. It'll be press release, SE update. Yeah. Our most affordable iPhone with our latest chip, or something to that effect, will be the press release.
Yeah, yeah. Also in the small iPhone space this week, we see evidence to suggest that the iPhone 5S may support iOS 12, which is interesting because the iPhone 5 was dropped from iOS 11, right? And that it kind of fits the timeline of like how many years you get support for new iOS updates that iPhone 5S would be dropped. But we have evidence to suggest that iOS 12 will be supported by the 5S, which would be kind of a development.
Yeah, this is kind of a funny story, because a few days after the leaked email warning everyone not to talk to the press, we found a load of references in the open source WebKit project, which is the rendering engine behind Safari. And because it's open source, they contribute code to it all year round, and they have nightly builds and testing builds, and you can go and download the code. And obviously, updates to WebKit form part of the next versions of Safari that end up in iOS 12 and macOS 10.14, etc., etc. And very commonly, actually, some references to new features tend to turn up in the open source code base ahead of WWDC, just because they're testing this everything, and they don't, and because it's such a large code base, I think stuff just gets missed, right? Like, stuff that should be commented out or hidden just gets through the radar and gets posted to the nightlies. Like, one of these things has like a doc comment where it mentions this an availability modifier for one of the methods, and it says like available only on iOS 12 and macOS 10.14.
Right,
and then a code reviewer writes, please use the TBA macros, like the to-be-announced macros, rather than spilling out the names of the operating systems in the open. But this has happened in the past. Like, WebKit previously had references to like link previews and stuff ahead of 3D Touch on iPhone 6S. So this happened before. But yeah, this was testing logs that showed an iPhone 5S simulator running iOS 12's version of Safari, which would be an extra year of updates. That'd be 6 years of updates for the 5S. Whereas, like, the FM5 got cut off after 5 years. So they're either getting it further. Again, obviously, the headline version number does not necessarily mean that this device will get every feature of iOS 12, because they commonly cut off some things depending on hardware requirements, right? Like, not all features come to every to all older devices, necessarily. Right. And I'd say, especially this year, if there's a focus on performance and stability, as has been reiterated multiple times, I think this year they'll be even more careful not to spread the idea that this update is slowing down people's phones. So I would hope that they're being taking extra steps and extra checks to see and validate that every new feature can actually be supported on the older phones with good performance characteristics, and if they won't, that they'll be dropped. So I'd say this year more than any, we could see even more stuff that is like off limits for this older device. Still, you know, you find me an Android device that gets you 6 years of updates.
Right, yeah. I mean, I think part of it could be, too, that, I mean, iPhones get faster every year, and at a certain point, you could probably handle more generations of software updates. Like, if you look at the Mac, it goes way back as to what, like, Mac OS High Sierra can run on. It's kind of crazy. Like, I don't know how
you... And it just depends on which particular features are coming, right? Like, yeah. For instance, an AR kit stuff will not be supported on older hardware. But if this year's iOS 12 is less about big flashy new features and more about improvements across the operating system, like if you add, you know, different filtering options to mail or do not disturb tweaks, like there's no real reason that they cannot be given to older processors, for instance. Like,
right.
It just depends on what the features are.
It's almost like if there are features that you would get through an App Store update, if Apple had their apps updated to that route, you know, you those would be like in the norm and not like major new features that you'd need a new version of iOS for anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And like if you look at the iPad, the update schedule is a bit more random. Like they drop the iPad 1 particularly quickly. They drop the iPad 3. And it's less clear. Like whereas on the iPhones, they've been doing like 5 years of updates for the last three phones. And now it looks like they might be stretching to six. But again, Apple offers no guarantees, but they are known for offering updates for a long period of time. But it's just fun to see like these iOS 12 references pop up anyway, like especially in light of the, you know, the leaked email stuff.
Yeah, iOS 12 is real. We're not expecting like iOS 11.5 at WWDC kind of thing.
Yeah, we actually did a post on our 9to5 Mac Google Analytics, which track device logs from different devices, and we see plenty of iOS 12 hits from San Jose, Cupertino, you know, all the big hotspots of Apple engineers, and nothing about like 11.5 or anything like that.
Right.
There's going to be iOS 12 almost certainly, and then what's inside that is up to Apple.
Yeah, and on the same token, Mac OS 10.14 and not like Mac OS 11 for, you know, they're not going to take this year to like go to the next level. I mean, they always could through like marketing and change the version number somehow, but not.
I mean, the thing on Mac OS is they stopped talking about the numbers altogether, right? Like,
yeah, mostly. Yeah.
It would just be Mac OS, insert weird name here.
right, yeah. And speaking of Mac OS 10.14, there's also evidence through kind of the same method that suggests maybe, possibly, there might be some dark mode support in Mac OS 10.14.
Explain this to me. This is nuanced and complicated, but at a high level, WebKit is including code to handle reactions to what the system appearance is and changes to the system appearance reflecting in WebKit.
Right.
And at the moment, there's only one system appearance, right? Which is what we all see. And the thing in the settings where you change between like the blue and the silver tints, that doesn't count as the overall appearance. The appearance is the overall look of buttons and how toolbars and stuff are styled and things like that. And so the appearance literally is aqua. At the end, that's what the code is called. It's like NS appearance dot aqua. And then these code references are all new that handle changes to the system appearance. Well, right now, there's only one system appearance. So it heavily suggests that in 10.14, there will be multiple system appearances that can change dynamically. And what system appearance could they add? Probably a dark theme. So that's where this comes from. This is like the thread of implication. The code doesn't explicitly say dark mode here, but That's kind of the line of thought there.
Yeah, and Guy Rambo, who discovered this and wrote the story for the 95 Mac, appears to have built WebKit in some way to test this out. And you know, we'll have it linked in the show notes. But he basically has an image of like what happens whenever you run it with this appearance option. Which, I mean, it makes your buttons dark, and we can only hope. You know, and the thing is like years ago, whenever they added the dark menu bar and dock. Like it was introduced as like dark mode, I believe. It was like, you know, way oversold. They eventually like changed the description of it. You know, once we get the beta, we could like see what it was like, and I think we kind of thought like you'll need like more updates for this to go everywhere. But we've not yet seen anything that's more than the dark you know, menu bar and dock. And one thing you can do is if you have like a private browser for Safari, like doesn't that have a dark kind of like what would, well, no, I think it used to, maybe, or maybe it was iOS. It's not,
yeah,
iOS.
Yeah, it does have a darkish theme.
Yeah, so
I mean, it's not I think on the Mac it just makes the address bar a dark color.
Yeah,
on iOS it changes all the toolbars and stuff to a dark, right, to like black, to like white on black and stuff.
Yeah, and I think that's what people want when they talk about a dark mode, is like,
I have seen a non-zero number of people run Safari in private browsing mode on the iPhone, and then when I ask them about it, they just say, I just like how it looks.
Oh, that makes sense. But that like totally breaks your web experience. Like, you got to sign in.
Yeah, it's terrible,
yeah,
because
yeah,
it never saves your history or anything like that.
Right.
But people are like, it looks cool, it's black.
Wow, yeah. So, I mean, we know that there's demand for this feature. And some people, like, don't care about dark mode. They're not going to use it. And I think it kind of depends on, like, your work environment, like, where you're using stuff. But it would – I mean, the one place they've introduced, like, kind of this feature is with tvOS, because they added, I think with tvOS 10, the ability to have a dark theme. And then they added with 11 the ability to, like, to change it based on sunset and sunrise automatically. We've just not seen this anywhere else, and it would be welcome. Like, bring it. Also, in CarPlay, if you're using iOS in CarPlay, your map changes, and probably true with the map app on the iPhone as well. But your banner alerts change from the light tint to the dark tint. You know, because we've seen like what a dark mode would look like in that way. I think based on, you know, something, whether it's sunset.
Yeah, I mean, on the iPhone, if you're doing 10x10 navigation and it's dark, the map will have a dark theme.
Yeah, and even, I mean, with CarPlay, like, if you get a new message, your message bubble becomes that dark tint. Like, just at a certain hour, it flips over. And you get, like, what you would want on iOS to be your dark mode, you know. And with the iPhone X, the OLED display, there's so much reason to do it. I feel like if there's any pushback from why they wouldn't do it is what they said, I think, on, like back channels before, is, like, the web. You're never going to get dark mode for the web. But even that isn't true. Like, you know, you could, if you support it in the system level, like, you could encourage the web to, you know, have modes as well. Like,
yeah, I mean, they encourage the web to support safe area insets for the iPhone X's notch.
Like, yeah, which just happened widely.
Yeah, and some Retina. Websites do it, right?
yeah.
But, like, you could easily have, like, a CSS property that says what the system, you know, style is, whether it's light or dark, and then a website could adjust to support it. Because some websites already offer like a dark reading mode that you can just like toggle on the settings, so
yeah,
they could just have it dynamically respond to what, you know, the user selects. So
yeah,
I don't think that's a very, very good justification. The one thing I would say is that if you have a quite dark black theme on iPhone X, and then you scroll around, the OLED pixels don't update very fast enough, so you sometimes get like this kind of ghosting effect.
Yeah,
where like the text doesn't immediately move, it like, you know, leaves like this trail and then it catches up with it. I could see them saying that's why we're not doing it, because it kind of looks weird. Like, another example, if you open the calculator app and then you go into multitasking, right, so you're in the switcher, and then you drag the like the switcher up and down, like the card for the calculator, the circles will move around and it will look really weird. Like, you should try this afterwards. Like, it looks really janky, and it's just because of the way that OLED refreshes darker pixels, like, slower. So maybe that's a reason why they're like, we're not going to do it at the moment. And then this will really annoy people. When they have a second generation OLED screen that has faster refresh rate, then they'll add the dark mode, but it'll only be for the new devices. That'll really make people angry, but I can actually see that as a justification for them.
Yeah, it would feel like upsell for a killer feature that doesn't have like a processor limitation, but it would be because of the what you described. So that would make sense. Now, do you think that they've already shipped dark mode on Apple TV without iOS and macOS, and I think that was largely because people like me complained that the old Apple TV had a dark theme, like it was all you had, and the new Apple TV was just like bam in your face in the living room when you wanted it to be dark a lot of the time.
And I mean, especially in the living room, it's like theatery. It's generally a dark environment, right? And you don't want like bright white UI necessarily. Right.
Exactly. Do you think that they would ship a dark theme in macOS and not a dark theme in iOS?
Oh, definitely. I have no hesitation about that whatsoever.
Yeah, that would drive people crazy.
Because I think the iOS... I think my biggest hold up with supporting a dark theme on iOS is like they haven't sorted out the visual aesthetic of iOS for the white theme. Like they're still transitioning between, you know, bold text here, round rectangle buttons here, filled in buttons here, shadows here, drop shadow, not drop shadows over here, single line buttons, text buttons over here. Like, they still haven't reached a uniform design language for their one theme they offer. Like, if they expanded to two themes, it'd be even worse. And you can kind of, like, proxy what a dark theme on iOS might look like by using that, like, what's it called, smart invert colors and stuff?
Yeah.
And it makes it dark, but not in a very nice way. Like, all the blue becomes orange, and it's like, you know, not very nice. And,
yeah.
Like, if you did an actual dark theme, you might still just have a blue color. It'd just be like a darker blue, you know, like a bright, vibrant blue. Whereas smart invert colors is literally just, if it's white, it's black, and if it's blue, it's orange, because it literally is just inverting the color palette.
Yeah.
So you can give it a go. But yeah, like I would 100% see them doing a dark mode on macOS and not doing it on iOS.
Now, the one thing I could think of, like why they might be hesitant on the iPhone, aside from like what you describe of like technology, is that right now certain apps like are basically dark mode, like the clock app, the activity app, the trailers app, the wallet app used to be this way until they broke it. You know, like then you kind of lose.
The iTunes Store app is dark only when you go on the TV and film section.
Right, like they can pull it off. I just wonder if they're hesitant because then you lose that as a tool. Like every app looks that way,
like the visual differentiation between applications.
Yeah, yeah.
And like,
I mean, yeah. I think if
but
we
you
all
could
had a
argue
choice,
that most apps are bright white and you can't separate between them.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah. I think if we have a choice, like we're all going to vote dark mode, please. But you know, we'll see. And this is one of those things. It's like we're not saying that macOS 10.14 will have dark mode. We're just saying that you know, we can see how this can lead to that. So we'll see how that goes. All right, 95Mac.com, and we'll be back next week. Bye, everybody.